Good evening and welcome everyone. So yes. So first of all, I would like to ask you a question. So anyone of you here that you have never experienced any, I mean you have never faced any difficulties in life and no problem at all, and those that never have any problems in life and no difficulties, they don't have to face any difficulties in life, please put up your hand. No one, isn't it? And sometimes we tend to compete, isn't it? Oh, my problem is bigger than yours. Yours problem is, oh, not as, you know, I have more difficulties than you do. But actually we all have, isn't it, problems in life. And just recently when I was in Singapore and someone said, you know, as a lay people, it's quite difficult to let go. I think as a monastic, it's easier. Then I tried to tell him, you know, I said, you know, whether you are in lay life or you're in monastic life, we have to go through difficulties. Doesn't mean that you become a nun, then your life is easier. No, that is part of life, you know, that we having problems is part of life, isn't it? So having problems in life is not a problem. The problem is we think that we shouldn't have problems. That's the problem, isn't it? We think that we shouldn't have problems. You know, when we face any, we not be able to, when we think that we shouldn't have problems, we not be able to look at our problem objectively. We just take it personal. We think that only me, oh, poor me, I have so much suffering, and the other people are really, you know, having a good life, really smooth, you know. And this is how we always think that, you know, we always think that, oh, only when we solve our problem, we be happy. We can never solve our problems. There's more problem come, you know, isn't it? We solve one, we have another one. And I remind me of one of the jokes I had to share with you. It's a long joke, and from our Gigi Grand. So that is Noah in 2013. They said in the year 2013, the Lord came unto Noah, who was now living in one of the countries. I don't want to mention the country names. And said, once again, the earth has become weak and overpopulated, and I see the end of flesh before me. Built another ark and saved two of every living things along with a few good humans. He gave Noah the blueprint saying that you have 6 months to build the ark before I will start the unending rain for 40 days and 40 nights. So 6 months later, the Lord looked down and saw Noah weeping in his yard, but no ark. So Noah, he roared, I'm about to start the rain. Where is the ark? He asked. So forgive me, Lord, begged Noah. But things have changed. I needed a building permit. I have been arguing with the inspector about the need of a sprinkling system. My neighbor claimed that I have violated the neighborhood zoning laws by building the ark in my yard and exceeding the height limitation. We had to go to the development appeal board for a decision. Then the hydro one demanded a bond by posting for the future cost of moving power lines and others overhead obstruction to clear the passage for the ark's move to the sea. I told them that the sea would be coming to us, but they would hear nothing of it. Getting the wood was another problem. There's a ban on cutting local trees in order to save the spot out. I tried to convince the environmentalists that I needed the wood to save the owls, but no go. When I started gathering the animals, an animal rights group sued me. They insisted that I was confining wild animals against their will. They argued the accommodations was too restrictive and it was cruel and inhumane to put so many animals in a confined space. Then the minister of the environment ruled that I couldn't build the ark until they conducted an environmental impact study on your proposed flood. I'm still trying to resolve a complaint with the Human Rights Commission on how many minorities I'm supposed to hire for my building crew. Immigrations and naturalizations are checking the visa status of most of the people who want to work. The trade union said I can't use my funds. They insisted that I have to hire only union workers with art building experience. To make matters worse, Inland Revenue seized all my assets, claiming I'm trying to leave the country illegally with the endangered species. So forgive me, Lord, but it would take at least 10 years for me to finish this art. So certainly the sky's clear. The sun began to shine and rainbows stretched all across the sky. Noah looked up in wonder and asked, "You mean you're not going to destroy the world?" No, said the law. "The government beats me to it." This is how in life, isn't it? We try to solve all these problems. It's always problem in life, isn't it? We can never solve all the problems. So then this is sometimes this is how we not be able to look at, you know, that is part of life. The Buddha said, the reason why we suffer, because we don't understand life. We don't understand this is part of it. It's just like, it's a whole package. We've been born into this world. That is part of the package. So no matter what we do, we're not going to get it right. It's not going to be perfect, isn't it? Because we try to make it perfect. That is a problem. And if we plan and plan, we can plan. But things is not going to go according to our plan, isn't it? It's just recently when I just came back from India pilgrimage, and everyone asked me, "How's your trip?" I said, "Oh, it's really good." I said, "It's better than I expected." I said, "It's really better than I thought," because I have no expectation. So because I expect that things is going to go wrong, because when you have that, then you have less suffering, because we don't want, you know, whatever, we want it to be otherwise. So whatever problem we have in life, we think that we shouldn't have problem. So that is the biggest problem. So if we can't see that, that is normal. So we can only do our best. So we can, you know, no matter what we do, it's not going to be perfect. But we try to make it perfect, and then we try to plan and plan. I heard someone, you know, making plan of 5 years plan and 10 years plan. Yes, we can make the plan. You can have all this plan. But it's not going to turn up the way we want it to be. And when things don't go the way we want it to be, so our reaction is we blame, isn't it? Who to blame? So before we go on holidays, we have all this plan. So then we started to fantasize what is going to happen, isn't it? You know, And then the mind go on and on expecting what is going to happen. When things doesn't turn out, then we blame others that, you know, your fault. And, you know, and we never look at that is beyond our control. Lots of things that beyond our control. We have a little bit control, but most of the time, we don't have control. You know, things happen according to multiple causes and conditions. Of course, we have to make a little bit of plan. You know, for example, I'm going to India. I have to apply these visas to go to India. You know, to make sure that, you know, my passport is not expired and things like that. You know, we need to have that. You know, but what is going to happen? We all don't know. So when we leave that open, you know, then we make life easier and not to take it too seriously. Sometimes we take things too seriously. I remember when I first, you know, when I started to give talks, I'm really concerned about, I always used to look at the comments, what people, you know, how people react, you know, what's the comments, you know. But now I don't look at it. And I realized that, you know, no matter what you say, someone will praise you, someone will criticize you. It is impossible that everybody praise you, isn't it? So I have no control, isn't it? Even in one of the suttas, you know, the Buddha said, if you don't say anything, you've been criticized. You said little bit also, you've been criticized. You said a lot also, you've been criticized. So we said, whether you said anything or not, people still, you know, whatever you do. So that is part of life. Having difficulties, and we have to solve the problem, you know, having problem, and sometimes we think that the end of the world, because when we focus on our problem and we take it personally, so when we react to that, so we not be able to really step back to look at our problem, isn't it? To investigate the cause of the problem. Where is the problem coming from? So because of we immediately take it, we identify this as my problem, you know. We overwhelmed by our problem, so we not be able to step back and look at it. This is, you know, this is a part of life. So the more we understand, you know, life, you know, the happier we are. The reason why we suffer because we don't understand life. So this is how, you know, that when we have any problem in life, so we be able to step back and look at it. That is normal, you know. Of course, some people say, you have no idea how much I have gone through, you know. We all, you know, have a problem in life, but if we take it personally, then we not be able to really investigate to look at where is the cause of the suffering, where is the problem coming from. So this is part of life, you cannot avoid. So the Buddha, that's why when the Buddha's enlightened, the first teaching the Buddha gave is the Four Noble Truths. When I was in Singapore, I have one someone come to me, he asked a question. He's a non-Buddhist. He said that I've been looking into different religion. And I find that Buddhism is the most confusing religion. He said that. Because especially he said the Buddha thought about this Four Noble Truths. He said, I have really no idea about this first noble truth, you know. What is that about? Life is suffering. Why the Buddha said life is suffering? So I said, because Buddha said life is suffering is because of we suffering because of we are not in control, but we try to control life. Like being grow old, you see, we cannot control being old, isn't it? Being sick, because having this body is part of that, is unavoidable. So, but we try, we spend so much time and then energy, we try to make ourselves look young, isn't it? With all this cosmetic, all this surgery, you know, to look young, you know. And even though we look young, but the body still grow old, isn't it? And, you know, eventually we still get sick, you know, and the memories go. And it's so funny, recently I read an article. There was a husband suing the wife for giving birth to three ugly children. And it's apparently that the wife has gone through this plastic surgery, and she was really ugly. So that's why she gave birth to three ugly children. Then, and he won the case because he said that he was being cheated. You know? So, and things like that, you know? And this is how we create lots of suffering for ourselves. Like we try to, you know, that is just impossible that we don't grow old, isn't it? And we spend so much time, you know, to try to make our body look young. We look young, you know, not to grow old. But eventually we still sick and we still die, you know. So then we miss out lots of fun in life. So when the Buddha said first noble truth, suffering doesn't mean that we should suffer. It's not. Because we don't understand suffering, that's why we suffer. When we understand suffering, we don't suffer. We suffer less. Because of the cause of the suffering, because of the expectation. You know, come from ourselves. What we expect of ourselves, what we expect of others, isn't it? Like for example, sometimes even to our practice, we expect, you know, we should be, you know, after all this year practice, my practice, you know, should be in a certain level. And then sometimes we think that, oh, it's too difficult, you know, how come, you know, then we try harder. So that's why we have to start with where we at, you know. That is the expectation of who we are, and we try to force ourselves to be someone else, isn't it? Rather than just at ease and at peace who we are. Just being oneself is already enough suffering, isn't it? We try to be someone else, and we create more suffering for ourselves. And also, it's not only that. This expectation is not only come from ourselves. We extend this to the people around us, isn't it? How we expect others, you know? Then we impose on the others, isn't it? We expect others to behave in a certain way. When they don't behave in a certain way, we got upset. We think that they are wrong. They're a terrible person. You know, that they shouldn't behave like that. Because of we expect them to behave in a certain way. We impose our views of how the person should be, how things should be. And this is how, then sometimes also because of this expectation, and leads to worries. We worry about things don't turn up the way we want it to be, isn't it? We worry about everything. We're going to grow old. We worry about that we're going to lose all our property, our money, you know. So the more we accumulated, and then we worry about, you know, how to secure our wealth, isn't it? We worry. So that's like, this is how it leads to all this, you know, when we worry and leads to this fear, anxieties, and this is unwholesome state of mind, unwholesome qualities. When we worry and with this fear, actually, this is very draining. So then this is how we, and then we try to make things happen the way we want it to be. We try to control. So we try to control the situation. We try to control other people. So we can't change the people around us, isn't it? And because we can only change ourselves. And this person asked me the questions that they said Buddhism is a most confusing religion. Then, and I further on, I explained to him. I said Buddhism is a realized religion. So it's a religion that you have to put into practice. You have to apply it into your life. The Buddha said this is through your own direct experience, your direct knowledge. That is come from your own direct knowledge. They said in one of the suttas, Kalama suttas, the Buddha said, you don't just believe what I said. We should investigate. So they said the Buddhist religion is that, you know, and I explained to him, like, for example, if I try to explain to you that if you haven't taste a mango in your life, and I try to explain to you how a mango, I try to describe how a mango tastes like, you can never comprehend, isn't it? You can only imagine, you can never comprehend. It's all words. But this is have you have to really put into, you know, practice through your own experience, through your own direct knowledge. And that's why the Buddha said we don't simply believe. And another question is that, you know, that because of we've been conditioned that way, and someone tried to teach the nephew that how to, you know, that we try to accumulate things that do not bring you ultimate happiness. That is, he tried to explain to him that how the joy of letting go. When you give something, you feel happy. That kind of happiness is different. But the person said, you know, it's difficult for him to really comprehend unless you have that experience yourself. How is it like? You know, that's like you try to explain to that person, you can't. So I remember, like, you know, sometimes ago when I just started to use emails, you know, because when I was a young nun, I don't use email. I have no communication, so I don't. Because now my positions that I need to have this communications, like I need to go out to teach and I use email. So I remember the first time I received first email and someone write that ASAP. Then it take me so long to try to figure out what is ASAP. You know? And then DIY. So actually, Buddhism is a religion that is do it yourself. It's DIY. You have to do it yourself, you know. So no one can help you. You know, we are very, very fortunate we have the Buddha's teaching. The Buddha's left behind this whole part of practice, the whole package, you know. You have to bring all this package back. It's just like sometimes you go to some furniture shop, you know. Nowadays, you have all this DIY, isn't it? You have to assemble yourself. You have to bring it back. You have to assemble yourself. So you bring that back. Then make sure that you look at the instruction, isn't it? I find that sometimes I always don't look at the instruction. Sometimes I tend to shortcut. I think that it will be quicker. Then I realize that actually I have to go through step from A to E, but I jump to from A to E. And then I miss the middle, then it just, I couldn't example the whole thing. So Buddhism actually is a religion that you have to really put into practice. You have to realize it yourself. This is your own wisdom. Even the Buddha's in front of you, the Buddha can't help us. Only we can help ourselves. So that's why the Buddhas, when the Buddhas teach this, give this, the first teaching, this Four Noble Truth, actually there is a way out. You know, there is a way out. So the Buddha's very, you know, he left behind this package that is this Noble Four Truth. That is to practice this is a morality, cultivation of the mind, and development of the wisdom. That is this is your own wisdom. And the wisdom that no one can take away from you. So that's why, because it's a religion that you have to put into practice, you have to apply it in your daily life, but you cannot comprehend, you cannot understand through all the words. But you have to help yourself. No one can help us, only we can help ourselves. So I remember, When before I started to meditate, and the only happiness that I know, the only options that I know is the happiness that I can get in life, that is true, going to have to get the best, a good food, you know, going to shopping, you know, and going to hair salon to beautify myself. I think that is a happiness that the only option that I have, you know, because I never experienced another type of happiness. There's the happiness come from inner peace. You know, the calm. Actually, we do not need a lot to be happy. But of course, because when he was just enlightened, so he was wondering, he was hesitant to teach, because he said the teaching is against the stream. Because in the world, that this is how we know, this is the only option we know to get the happiness from accumulating things, chasing after things, isn't it? This is the only happiness that we know. But we never experience the happiness that comes from being kind, being gentle, being a good person, you know, keeping the precepts, you know, to have so being a kind, a good person, a virtuous person. Because keeping the precept actually is practicing non-violent, non-harming. So when we know for ourselves, when we have done, we haven't done anything that causes anyone any hurts or harm, we feel good about ourselves, isn't it? When we have done something that we do, we feel that it's not quite right. It's really bothered our mind, disturb our mind. It's very difficult to be peaceful. That's why if we want to cultivate the mind, we need to have the support of you need to have the morality, the support of morality. You know, that is to help the support to cultivate the peaceful mind. So we need to have the peaceful mind to develop this wisdom. But unless until we have a taste of it, we experience that, we can never comprehend that what is just like, is just like a fish. Is the fish always in the water? And we try to explain how is it like when you're outside the water. You can never comprehend unless you do it yourself. You put into practice. Because you can never understand. Even now, I try to explain to you. Unless you have that experience and you can relate to what I'm trying to say. But if not, it's very difficult. That's why I told this person, I said, it's normal that you feel, you think that it's a very confusing. If you think that you know, then it's really a problem, isn't it? If you think that you know them all, then it's really a problem. I said, it's normal that you think that it's confusing. So that's like Buddha's teaching actually is not in theory, and we don't pray to the Buddha, and the Buddha can't help us. So we cannot pray to the Buddha to ask the Buddha to help to free us, only through our own effort, and it is possible through our own practice, our own effort. So we put into practice. So Buddhism actually is a religion that is DIY, do it yourself. So no one can help us, because when we develop this wisdom, this direct knowledge, actually no one can take it from us, isn't it? So at the end of our life, nothing we can take away with us. We have to leave everything behind. And even our wealth, you know, that we keep accumulating things. That we think that we want securities, isn't it? We think that, you know, this our wealth will give us happiness, you know. As, you know, we have so much money, so I don't have to worry about my life, you know. So we think that they give us the securities. No, no guarantee. Because who knows? When there is a fire, now bushfire. When the fire comes, overnight everything gone. And when there is a flood, everything gone. When there is a war, when there is a economic crisis, you know, overnight everybody you lose everything. There's no security, you know. To accumulate things and try to get happiness and from accumulating things only through giving things. The kind of happiness the Buddha encourages, you know, the happiness that come from being a virtuous person, the happiness come from meditation, the happiness come from being a generous person, being of service, being helping someone, because this kind of happiness is not rely or dependent on something outside us. It's independent, and this kind of happiness is more fulfilling and satisfying. And this is the wholesome happiness. When this kind of wholesome happiness leads to peace and calm, stillness. So when our mind is still, and that's where the insight arise. Isn't it? So when our mind is confused, when we're confused, so we try to solve a problem. Can we? We can't, isn't it? But if we remove ourselves from the usual situation, and we just make our mind as peaceful as we could, as calm as we could, and we got the solution. You know, by worrying about things will not really help us. So just to make the mind as peaceful as possible. So when our mind is peaceful, when our mind is still, that we can see things as they really are. We have more clarity. So, and this kind of happiness, we cannot describe, we cannot to other people, unless you have that experience yourself. You have experienced this inner peace, inner calm yourself. If not, you can never comprehend. It's just like some people ask us, how come you nuns be happy? You have no video, you're not allowed to listen to the music, and how come you be happy? You know, because they cannot comprehend the other type of happiness that we experience. That is the inner peace, that is the calm, that is the content, the contentment. Because if you don't have contentment, if you are not content with whatever we have right now, so even we get the most wonderful, fantastic things in the world, we still not happy. We still look for what is the next thing, isn't it? Until we stop that one thing, expecting something else. We want something else, we expect something else. This is not what I want. That is the cause of the suffering. And that we are very fortunate we have the package that is free. You know, it doesn't cost you any money. All you need to do, you take this package back. And you do it yourself, okay? You make sure that you read the instruction carefully. Not try to go shortcut. So this religion is a religion that is a DIY religion. You have to do it yourself. You have to put into practice, and no one can help you. So the teachers, your friends, can only give you guidance, can only support you, can give you the support. You know, but we can't do the practice for you. We cannot walk the path for you. You have to walk yourself. You have to do it yourself. So we are very fortunate. So that make sure that you take this package back. This is the whole path of practice, the Buddhist teaching of the Noble Eightfold Path. And you took it back and you applied it into your life. Then you can really understand. You have to really do it yourself. Then you can really understand. It's not in theory. In theory, you cannot understand. It's only words. It doesn't make any sense to you until you have the taste of the inner peace, the inner happiness that there's religion that is to do it yourself religion. So, and you do not rely, we do not rely on others. Beings, you know, superior, we think the superior beings to help us, to free us. No, we free ourselves. So this is a DIY religion. I offer this for your reflection. May this teaching be of benefit to all of you. So any questions or comments? So, no questions, no comments. Yes.
Okay. What is the package that you're referring to?
Yes, that is the Noble Eightfold Path. That is the Buddha's, that is the first factor of the Noble Eightfold Path is right view. Right view. Right view doesn't mean that I'm right, you are wrong. Right view is right in the context that leads us to freedom, that leads us to happiness, that leads us to liberation, that right in the context. It's not that I'm right and then we're making other people wrong. And, you know, even, for example, sometimes ago, someone asked me a question that he said that, you know, the person was being humiliated that because of he keeping the five precepts, being a good person, people think that he's a bit silly. So he said, you know, I'm just doing things that, you know, so I said, it's okay. I said, as long as you know that, you know, if you don't have to get upset with the other person, if the other person think that you are silly. When we get upset, then we are holding to our views. So when we're holding to our views, we got upset, we got angry with other people, then that is not right view. So right view, that is the right understanding. right in the context that leads us to freedom. I said, it's okay. Even the whole world argue with you, you don't argue with them. It's okay. Because that is because when we're holding on to our views, we think that this is right and actually it's wrong view. Because we lead to arguments. When we lead to arguments, fight, and that is not right view. Because they're not leading to happiness. And the second Nobel Four Path is that is right intention. Because we have to have the right view, isn't it? We have some stuff like a right view actually is a wisdom aspect. It's, you know, we have some right understanding. So when we have this right understanding, our intention is a right intention, isn't it? This is how we start from the mind. The mind is a forerunner. So when we have the right view, right under wisdom, so our intention is right intention. So right intention, that is a, you have the intention of renunciation. You have the intention of like giving rather than try to getting things, like giving things, you know. Renunciation doesn't mean that you have to become monks or nuns. No, that is you give things rather than you try to get things, accumulate things. That is the right intention. And another two right intention, that is the thinking of non-harming and non-violent. And this is right intention. This is right. And then the right intention, the fourth one, the third one is that is right speech. So right speech, right action, right livelihood, and this part is our morality. So that's like the Buddha's divide this whole path into three paths. That is morality, cultivation of the mind, and development of the wisdom. So that's the wisdom part. So that's why this path, you have to have a bit of wisdom to start off with. That's why right views and right intention is the wisdom aspect. Then that is the right life, speech, right bodily action, right livelihood, and the sixth one, right effort. Right effort, that means that the right effort, we make an effort. The four right effort the Buddha mentioned, that is when there is unwholesome thoughts arise, we not to allow these unwholesome thoughts to arise. If the unwholesome thoughts arise, you try to abandon these unwholesome thoughts. But if you can't abandon these unwholesome thoughts, we try to bring the wholesome thoughts to replace the unwholesome thoughts with wholesome thoughts. So this, then we try to make this wholesome thought stay in our mind. Just for example, if our mind is always thinking about a lot of anger, hatred, that is unwholesome, isn't it? Then that is disturb our mind. We are not peaceful. You know, that is unwholesome. They're not leading us happiness. So when we think of something good, we feel happy, isn't it? So then this is how. Then when we have this kind of, we train the mind, it becomes a part of ourselves, you know, to think of to because when we think of good things, so these unwholesome qualities were not easy, the defilements were not easily creep in. So that is the right effort. So right effort and right they call it stillness, or some they translate as right concentrations and right mindfulness. So these three actually is come together. Effort, you have to make an effort to stop the mind to go further, to stop our defilements to go further. So you have to make an effort to stop. So it's not to make an effort to try to get things, but we make the effort to stop the unwholesome defilements that lead us to more suffering. So this is in the cultivation of the mind. This is in a group that is stillness, mindfulness, and effort. And these three is come together. That is the cultivation of the mind, to cultivate a peaceful mind. These three aspects is together. that is all together is the Buddha says, this is the Noble Four Path. So I repeat again, right view, right intention, right speech, right bodily actions, right livelihood, right effort, right stillness, right mindfulness. Yes, this eight, altogether is eight. So you have to take up the whole path of practice. So when you divide this, that is to have the morality, cultivation of the mind, so meditation, because when we meditate, we become more mindful, more aware of what's happening in this moment, isn't it? So if you don't aware that what's going on, so we can't work with our defilements. We don't even know that is defilements, isn't it? So that's why you need to cultivate the mind in meditation. But we cannot just meditation itself, you know, it doesn't work. It's just we think that we just sit and meditate. No, you have to support by the morality, being a virtuous person. Because when we are a virtuous person, then we have a sense of gladness. We have non-remorse. Because that is help to support the meditation. So then when we have this peaceful mind, and that's where we develop our wisdom. So, and this is the whole path of practice. Actually, it takes time. It's not, it will not happen overnight. This whole path of practice, you have to take the whole path of practice. We cannot say, oh, I'm only just being a good person, just keep the precept and you don't meditate. If you don't meditate, because then your mind is not, you don't have the awareness and your mind is not alert. You know, because of course, morality is important. Morality itself, just being a good person, is not the goal, is not an end of itself, but it's essential, it's important. We need the morality to support the peaceful mind. So being a peaceful person will also not free us from suffering, isn't it? When we meditate, yes, we're peaceful. When we come out, we still suffer, isn't it? So only through the development of the wisdom, the reason why we suffer because ignorant. We can't see things as they really are. So we take things personally. We can't see that. That's why we have to cultivate the mind. We have to develop this wisdom to free us. So when I talk about unwholesome and wholesome, doesn't mean that it's bad or terrible. No. Unwholesome, it means that whatever that we do that causes us suffering, you know, that is unwholesome. So whatever action that we do causes us happiness, that is wholesome. So when we suffer, that is unwholesome. It's not that it's good or bad. So that is the Noble Four Path. This is the whole path of practice. So. Okay. So I think there's no more questions because I... Yes, there's one more.
Thank you. Is it on? Yeah. I'm just trying to make a little sense this state of true happiness and peace and content.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that we're able to put a name on that experience or a label,
mm-hmm.
does that still make that a very sensory thing and therefore a form of attachment or grasping in a subtler way to the more consumeristic mm-hmm. happiness mm-hmm. as opposed to a state of emptiness. Does that make sense?
Yes. Yes. It's just I try to explain that in this way. Sometimes you have to let go of the causal happiness, but we still have to hold on to because we are not there yet. You see, this is a gradual training. We cannot say, let go, we can't. So we have to let go on these unwholesome actions, unwholesome qualities, because that disturbs the mind. That is a unwholesome quality that we have to abandon that first. That is the causal that the happiness that there is a cause of happiness. So we still hold on to that the more refined happiness, but ultimately that we have to go beyond that, even the fine happiness. Because even holding on to the happiness attached to that is also leads us to suffering. You see? But it's always better to hold some things than rather than to doing something that is really causes more suffering for ourselves. It's okay. Because we have to understand that we have to start with where we at. We are not there yet. So we still have to hold on to something. It's just like a raft. We want to cross over the other side of the shore. So we need to make use of the raft. We hold on. Only with the happy mind we can do it, isn't it? When we are too much suffering, we cannot meditate. When we are too a lot of suffering, isn't it? We can't. We cannot calm our mind down. We need the happiness to do the work. We need to have the happiness to work with our defilements. So is it answer your questions? Yeah, makes sense. So any more questions or comments? So I think that's it. So remember, DIY, okay? Do it yourself. You have to do it yourself. No one can help you. And you will see the result if you really, really follow instruction.
Supatthipanno bhagavato sa